consecrate my office, my energies, and all the wisdom I can summon to the cause of peace among nations.
Now those who seek absolute power, even though they seek it to do what they regard as good, are simply demanding the right to enforce their own version of heaven on earth.
I want to thank Secretary Powell for his careful and powerful presentation of the facts.
A pack of lies. A pack of lies.
The United States government has, one way or another, ordered, authorized, permitted, tolerated, torture.
We're making tremendous progress, but there is much more to do to win the war on terrorism and defeat terrorism.
I have a dream. I have a dream.
The fact is, we do need better international governance to help spread the benefits of globalization, 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 globalization.
American world domination or paramountcy. Historically, the U.S. sought security, not domination.
Nothing's perfect in life, so you have an election that's not quite perfect.
Now was the time to come forward and say who specifically was on that energy task force and lift any kind of shadow that's still there.
We've been through this issue a number of times.
We need to make sure that the political, the economic, and the security infrastructure of that state is shaped and helped to come into being.
Weapons of mass destruction. In 1975, the United States signed a treaty banning the dumping of chemical weapons at sea. Before this, though, the U.S. and several other countries had disposed of tons of mustard gas and other chemical agents off coasts around the world. A series in the Newport News Daily Press this week documents the extent of the U.S. dumping and the health problems it's caused. John Bull was the reporter, and he joins me now. Welcome, John Bull.
I'm glad to be here, Jackie.
When did this dumping start, and what kinds of chemicals were dumped?
The Army dumped chemical weapons mostly from World War II up until 1970 or so before we signed an international treaty that banned the practice. There apparently was some dumping after World War I. We're mostly talking about mustard gas and other related blister agents and many tons of nerve gas.
How many tons?
Conservatively estimated by the surviving Army records, at least 64 million pounds. The policy apparently was, at the close of World War II, to dump all our overseas stockpiles off the coast of whatever country they were in. That would include Australia, Japan, India, Pakistan, Norway, France, Italy. It's a long litany.
So fishermen catch these things in their nets and then...
Yes. Nerve gas lasts roughly about 6 weeks in the ocean and kills pretty much everything that it touches once it's released, and it's kind of a time-delayed release depending on when the shells corrode. The mustard gas, however, is much more lengthy and a bit more insidious in that it becomes a concentrated gel in the ocean, and it lasts at least 5 years rolling around with the prevailing currents. It gets crusted over. Fishermen pull it up in their nets. They don't know what they're touching, then it's too late.
How many people have been killed?
Well, five have died off the coast of Italy since 1946, and 232 have been injured off the coast of Italy, 85 off of Japan, and many, many, many hundreds of fishermen in the Baltic and North Seas have been injured either by United States or British dumped chemical weapons after World War II.
Which killed tens of thousands.
A prescription from President Bush to battle a possible flu outbreak, a $7 billion plus emergency plan.
There is no pandemic flu in our country or in the world at this time.
Really, the person you describe is not going to be concerned about bird flu. Because bird flu is a disease of chickens, of ducks, of geese, and of some wild birds. And the ordinary person is only going to get it if they come into direct and intimate contact with an infected bird or with uncooked raw meat from that infected bird.
The Bush White House has been plagued by one piece of bad news after the other. And historically,
you know what that means. It's nation-scaring time.
A pandemic, a flu pandemic, could spread quickly. It infects millions, spreading destruction, global consequences of a devastating global pandemic. It can grow to an inferno. At some point, we are likely to face another pandemic.
okay, I'm scared, but I'm still not confused.
A pandemic is unlike other natural disasters. A pandemic is a lot like a forest fire.
Isn't a forest fire a natural... Forget it. Now I'm confused.
At San Francisco International and other U.S. airports, new quarantine stations have been set up to identify and isolate potential avian flu victims. Officials at the Centers for Disease Control tell CNN they have quarantine stations at 11 international airports in the United States, with six more in development.
Of what went on in Iraq and how the what went on prior to Iraq and how the evidence regarding intelligence was manipulated. As simple as that. They agreed to do it.
Earlier today, Senator Spector said he wished the Judiciary Committee had the jurisdiction to do hearings into pre-war intelligence. Have you talked to any Republican colleagues?
Let me tell you.
Supporting you on that side?
We have had, not in the Armed Services Committee, not in the Intelligence Committee, not in the Judiciary Committee, we have not had oversight hearings. We have not had oversight hearings. On any subject, you go through all the committees, just not those.
Mr. Leader, why not though consult with the leader and say I have an interest?
Consult with the leader so he stops me from going and moving on this? What do you mean consult with him? What are you talking about?
Well, that's what he had suggested that you should have done.
Well, he can suggest anything he wants. Consult with him. All they would have done is quorum call, and we couldn't have done this. Got to understand a little bit about procedures around here. Do my colleagues want to say anything, Senator Durbin, Senator Schumer?
You said it all.
Last question, seriously.
Jeremy Roberts was on the floor saying that his staff had been working on this investigation, that they've been at this.
I'm sure they have, a speck at a time. They've done nothing substantive, and that's been the problem.
Did you ever go around at cocktail parties, because this has been alleged against you as well, before the Robert Novak column, and boast, my wife, the CIA agent, my wife works for the CIA?
Of course not. First of all, I have 5-year-old twins, and so we don't go to very many cocktail parties. You've seen me at precisely one in the many years that we've been in Washington together, and that was actually a book party. And you did not see my wife there, and you didn't hear me say anything about my wife at that
party. How well known was it that she worked for the CIA before the Novak column?
It was not known outside the intelligence community. It was the day after the Novak article appeared, my sister-in-law, my brother's wife, turned to him and asked him, do you think Joe knows this?
For the first time, less than half of those polled, just 40%, called President Bush honest and trustworthy. Extremely bad news for a man who fought his way into the White House on the very issue of trust.
If you give me your trust, I will honor it.
This is an administration that is embattled, and Americans are worried and unhappy. And they express that by casting doubt about on almost everything the administration does.
And this mean season is trickling down, leaving many inside the White House feeling bruised and vulnerable.
You were wrong, weren't you?
Again, David.
Like Press Secretary Scott McClellan, who was assured by Rove and Libby they were not involved in the leak case, and who then repeated those assurances to the press.
Your credibility has been damaged by this.
A year ago this time, Republicans were lining up for photo ops with President Bush. Now some are taking two steps back. That's how it looks in Virginia.
When you have a Republican president who easily carried the state twice, being shoved to the side and made a minor factor in the campaign, it tells you that George Bush is in deep trouble.
Mr. Bush easily carried Virginia 1 year ago. Now Republican candidate for governor Jerry Kilgore is trailing. Last week, Kilgore even steered clear of the president.
Just blocks away from the summit in this lockdown resort, tens of thousands of South Americans protested President Bush's free trade agenda and the war in Iraq. Protests that at times turned into anarchy, with some demonstrators using rocks and Molotov cocktails, even setting a bank on fire. Police responded with tear gas. President Bush came to the summit to talk about his free trade policy that he says would help ease poverty and create jobs in the region. But questions about the CIA leak scandal and the role of top aide Karl Rove continue to dog him.
The investigation on Karl, as you know, is not complete.
and therefore I will not comment upon about him and or the investigation.
The president also shrugged off new poll numbers indicating a majority of Americans now doubt his honesty.
The way you earn credibility with the American people is to set a clear agenda that everybody can understand, an agenda that relates to their lives, and get the job done.
The Pentagon has always insisted its treatment of detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and other undisclosed prisons around the world meets the spirit of the Geneva Conventions, even as the U.S. government argues terrorism suspects are not entitled to POW status under the letter of the law. And Bush administration officials argue the fact that some detentions may not be made public doesn't change that.
The fact that they are secret, assuming there are such sites, does not mean that simply because something is on, you know, and some people say that the test of your principles are what you do when no one's looking. And the president has insisted that whether it is in the public or is in the private, the same principles will apply.
The Pentagon insists it does not sanction torture and punishes anyone who violates that standard. But the current internal debate centers on how written guidelines should spell out restrictions on cruel, humiliating, or degrading treatment, language straight from the Geneva Conventions. The concern those broad labels could be applied by critics to a wide range of interrogation techniques the Pentagon considers legal and legitimate.
Well, I agree with Senator Levin. It seems to me there are two issues. One, how do you treat detainees in the normal course of events? And of course you don't torture them. Of course you subject them to the Geneva Accords and treat them completely decently. But he still wants to evade the issue. What would happen in an extraordinary case? In Australia today, they arrested 15 people. What if they had information that there was a bomb about to go off in a school somewhere or in a major building with lots of people? Torture would be used. And then I think Senator Levin is right. The president has to take personal responsibility. It should never be justified without a presidential authorization for specific use of specific tactics in a particular case. What we're doing is trying to have it both ways with studied ambiguity. We say we don't use torture, the president says, but then he authorizes the use of waterboarding, which is being done against Sheikh Khalid Mohammed and others. Waterboarding is you lower the head of the suspect into water until he almost dies. But that, they say, isn't torture because he's not actually physically hurt.
March 2003, dramatic days before war that included a very public ultimatum.
Saddam Hussein and his sons must leave Iraq within 48 hours. Their refusal to do so will result in military conflict.
But at the time, there were also private maneuverings among some Arab leaders to try to forestall the U.S. invasion. Now CNN is told that roughly 3 weeks before the first U.S. strike, Saddam Hussein agreed in principle to accept an offer of exile. The offer came from the United Arab Emirates and was presented to other Arab leaders during a summit of the Arab League in Egypt. The proposal, we are told, was never acted upon.
After all, more than 4,700 dead residents somehow managed to vote in last November's elections in the state of New Jersey. Now that would raise suspicions in some states, but apparently not in New Jersey.
After 25 years on the bench, Judge Walter Steed was on the opposite side on Wednesday, appearing before the Utah State Supreme Court, which held a hearing that will determine whether he can be both a judge and a polygamist.
I'm a Mormon, and the prophet Joseph taught that in order to receive the highest degree of glory in the celestial kingdom, that was necessary in this life.
One of his three wives was by his side.
Everybody likes to live their religion and do what they feel is right. Why not me?
Judge Steed serves in one of two small, secluded, secretive communities of fundamentalist Mormons along the Utah-Arizona border. Unlike most mainline Mormons, people here openly practice polygamy, which critics say leads to an abusive situation for the wives.
These women, they're American citizens, and they don't have basic civil and human rights in our country.
Alito's former law clerks might not know where he stands on abortion, but his mother said she does, telling the Associated Press, quote, "Of course he's against abortion." A statement that will likely be used by both sides during what is expected to be a bitter confirmation battle.
What the inspector general really found was that, in effect, the Department of Labor took a dive when it was supposed to protect the children who are working for Walmart, when it was supposed to protect the workers. It really allowed a sweetheart deal to be formed with Walmart that violated the procedures in the most serious fashion and compromised the rights of Walmart employees in the future. It gave Walmart concessions and traded those against future enforcements over these actions against Walmart. And it's just unbelievable. It may be legal, but in this case, clearly neither the Department of Labor nor Walmart understood the morality of what they were doing.
It was a neighbor of mine. He'd just been hired. He was got a job at Walmart. And I congratulated him, saying, that's great, you'll be able to get health care benefits. And he said, well, no. And he explained, I don't remember the precise words, but he basically said, it's too expensive and it's too difficult. But then he said to me, totally sweetly, but those nice managers are helping me fill out forms so I can get state aid. And I said, wait a minute. The state, California this is, right, is going to pay for your health care, and you're working at Walmart, a corporation that made $10 billion in profit?
How prevalent is that?
Very, very prevalent. We have managers in the movie, between them 46 years working at Walmart. They tell story after story after doing it. This is systemic. This is not the rotten apple theory that Walmart would try to convince us of.
Well, we'll be soon be replacing pictures of President Bush with Karl Marx. Well, my next guest is seeing red. He says that the clamor for oil companies to give back profits, for pharmaceutical companies to give away valuable flu drugs, and the antics we see probably on the Hill today. Communism, pure and simple. Joining me now is Charles Payne, the CEO of Wall Street Strategies. So, red we go, huh?
Well, it's looking that way. It really is alarming, though, Neil. I mean, when you talk about taking, in a capitalistic society, taking profits from a company because you think they're too profitable and, you know, making them pay a price for that, it's a little scary. Now, we had examples of this right after the Iraq War. One of the movements that began was this excessive profit-taking tax, where any company that benefit off Iraq and the war or the rebuilding should give back those profits. And now we're starting to see that type of thinking really steamroll.
Even Republicans, right? Judd Gregg, who was supposed to be on this show today, but he's caught up in this whole soap opera on Capitol Hill. But his argument has been that, you know, the oil companies are different because they provide a valuable national, almost emergency service.
Well, yeah, by the same token, though, we learned from the 1970s that, you know, we can change our behavior as consumers. Also, we live in an environment with supply and demand. Obviously, if the prices were too high, we would stop using it. I mean, we need to get to work and we need to go to schools, but there's a lot of wasteful usage of oil.
So, at this point, Congressman, where does the investigation go from here? The people that are most critical to establishing what the unit, Able Danger, knew and was capable of disseminating relevant to 9/11, have been gagged by the Pentagon and cannot speak. What do you do now?
Well, we have a DOD Internal Inspector General investigation that actually commenced today. I met for an hour and a half with four of their top leaders. They are, in fact, they were requested by three separate members of Congress, one senator and two House members. They have commenced an internal investigation of the Defense Intelligence Agency. In addition to that, I talked to the head of the General Accounting Office, and I have asked him to look at a criminal investigation of what happened and the deliberate attempt to cover up information. The person who debriefed Scott Philpott, Lou, was a guy named Dieter Snell. Dieter Snell worked for Jamie Gorelick. We have to know whether or not there was a deliberate attempt by Dieter Snell not to have the 9/11 Commission members know the full details of what Able Danger was doing. I can't answer that question. An investigation needs to take place.
Here's today's talking point from the official guide to being a good Republican. Talking point number 127. Hey, Democrats thought Iraq had weapons of mass destruction too. That's right. Bill Clinton believed the same thing we did. So if we were wrong, so is he. Some people might say that if George W. Bush had let weapons inspectors finish their job in Iraq, we'd have known there were no weapons. But then we'd have been bogged down in Iraq for months, instead of the 100 days we knew the war would last, and those other 2 years since then. People get all kinds of crazy ideas just because Clinton's sanctions actually did get rid of the weapons, and our boy George's war didn't. But the important thing is, democracy is on the march in Iraq. At least I hear some kind of marching and gunfire.